Well, social media has given everyone with an internet connection the ability to get their message out to the world. As early adopters, teens are usually at the forefront of social media trends, for good or ill. Lately, that's meant a shift away from broad public disclosures like Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram toward very private, limited networks of closer friends. While that may seem great, it's creating an entire world of teen activity screened off from outsiders, and that includes parents. And you may not be surprised to learn that a fair amount of what goes back and forth on between teens includes sexual expression. Here to discuss this trend is Wes Crenshaw. He's a Lawrence psychologist. He's currently completing the first two of four books on consent-based sex education. Book two goes into depth examining how online life has impacted teen sexuality. Wes, good to have you.
Good to see you, Steve.
Nicole Ahn is the co-author of Wes' latest books. She conducted a lot of the research and interviews for the books. Nicole, welcome back to you. Nice to have you.
Hi, thank you for inviting me.
Well, Wes, give us a brief history here of how we got to where we are today in terms of teen social media.
Yeah, when I was writing this up, I realized how not brief it is, but I'll give you the concise version.
Yeah.
So about the first 30 seconds that we had cameras attached to phones, kids began taking pictures of themselves in intimate poses and styles and sending them to other people. And there have been, I think it's very easy. When I look back at some of my old newspaper columns, I sounded almost hysterical about this because it's very easy to become kind of freaked out about this idea. But as it has evolved and become more ubiquitous than you can even imagine, these different platforms have formed that allow kids to share a lot of intimacy, whether that is emotional intimacy or sexual intimacy or visual intimacy. And some parents, I think, don't even yet realize that we've gone from a kind of open Facebook world to a very private, what's called Finstagram world, where people have just a very closed network where they share a lot of these things.
Let's talk a little more about Finstagram, Nicole. You're the resident teen here on our panel today. It's probably best to ask you, what in the world is Finstagram?
So Finstagram is a combination of words fake and Instagram. So it's a fake Instagram where you post pictures of things that you would really post on your main account, which is your Rinstagram, which is real Instagram.
They have language for everything.
Yeah.
Wow.
So pictures of like you going to parties in the summer or like a funny sleepover or like a funny picture that you want to post that you really wouldn't want to post on your main Instagram for your colleges and jobs to see. That's where we post our pictures.
Oh, so that's the origin of this. We've heard and we've talked on this show any number of times about, hey, we're cautioning young people as to what they put on social media because maybe someday their employers might see it. Mm-hmm. And you're saying this new idea of Finstagram is the answer to that, which is a closed off Instagram account only available to a few immediate friends.
Yeah, we found a way to like actually have fun on social media without the responsibilities of being a responsible adult.
And this has evolved exactly as you're describing it. We have warned kids for years, you're creating this digital footprint. And I think we thought, well, kids will, you know, stop doing this. Well, of course, they're not going to, but they actually become very sophisticated about protecting it. You may remember years ago we did a show on Twitter, and one of the things I pointed out there was that how upset teenagers were that their teacher would see them on Twitter. Well, that's the point of Twitter.
Yeah.
And so that's why a lot of teenagers aren't really doing a lot of expression on Twitter anymore, is they've learned that they have to create closed networks.
So, Nicole, teens then have these closed accounts, this notion of Finstagram again. Mm-hmm. Can I ask, like, how many people do you have on your Finstagram account? When you do this, how many people are seeing your messages?
Well, for mine, since my Instagram is kind of casual and it doesn't have any explicit content, I allow it to go up to like 95, 96 followers.
Oh, okay.
Compared to Wes's opinion where he thinks that I should only have like 6 followers.
This was a breakfast discussion today. So the other thing though is there's different levels of this. Like one of the things Nicole was talking about with me today is that she has 2 levels of Finsta. So you have your regular Instagram that, you know, know, your colleges and your parents and all this see, mm-hmm. and you post your, you know, how beautiful you are and smart every day. And then you have your Finsta, which is your, maybe in her case, 90. Most of the kids I see, it's 50 or 60. But Nicole is particularly interesting. Where you kind of share your private thoughts and your private pictures that you just want 90 people to know. Then many have these, what are be like a sub-Finsta, or what Nicole calls a Finsta-Finsta, which is like five people.
Wow.
And I see this quite a bit. I think Nicole just shares her deepest thoughts and poetry on hers. I am not a member, however, of hers. But for quite a few people, this is where teenagers are posting their more sexually explicit material, including nudes, which can mean literally nude, or it can mean bikini shots or partially nude shots. And that's in a tiny group of five or six people. And how this has evolved of late is it's become the symbol of body positivity. So I have just last week had a 18-year-old who's done this for a couple of years who said to me, and I quote, she told me I could quote her, the best thing I ever did was to open this Insta Nudes Finsta, where I have gotten so much positive feedback about myself and my sexuality from my friends. So this idea I had way back in 2004 that digital photography would allow kids to kind of explore themselves in a way that they couldn't before and become more – have a better, healthier view of their body finally now is beginning to emerge. And with it, though, comes, you know, some of those security issues we always worry about. But that's where these super Finstas come into play in terms of posting of nudity.
You know, this is so interesting to me because, Nicole, when we first broached this topic and I was looking at it last night and reading about this, my first impulse was this new development with Finstagram and this closed network of followers on Instagram for young people was going to be a bad thing, mm-hmm. that you're posting naughty pictures or whatever, and this was going to be lead to all kinds of issues. But what Wes said just sort of flips that upside down for me. To what extent, in your experience, has all of this been positive as opposed to something a lot more nefarious?
Definitely. I've had a lot of friends who made those sub-Finsta accounts or Finsta-Finsta accounts that multiply told me that making those accounts were the best choices of their entire lives, because it's like having a personal secret diary, but online. Mm-hmm. And it's also like a secret photo album from your family members and university admissions officers. Mm-hmm. And it's a healthy way to express your life in a more intimate level.
I was going to say, I mean, is it healthy to take pictures, nude pictures of yourself or nearly nude pictures, and share those with others? Again, for my generation, that you're talking Arabic here. That is completely foreign. Well, of course, we didn't have cell phones back then, but this is a whole different dynamic here, Wes.
You said it. So one of the things Nicole did, Nicole has been an incredible asset in the work on these books, because she can go out and do focus groups and interviews with teenagers. She is the dream partner in this.
Because she's a teen herself.
Yeah, and she's also really good at interviewing people. One of the things I sent her out to do was to ask people about the sort of the evolution of nudity, the idea of nudity. I had a suspicion I knew where this was headed, and her interviews really confirmed. Over the last 10 years, in part because of digital photography and in part because of pornography, which we've talked about many times here, kids are no longer sensitive to this idea of being nude. Now, I'm not saying they're all going to show up in, you know, class tomorrow nude, but to the idea of seeing each other's bodies without clothes on is not that big a deal anymore. And this is a huge change.
Because, where did this come from?
Well, it came from it is what psychologists refer to as systematic desensitization. Now, I'm going to propose for a moment, because we have such a hang-up about nudity in our society, I'm going to propose we sort of look at this value neutral for a second. Because what kids have done is to see so much nudity in their lives, online and in their bedroom and in their own pictures, that this is
on their phones you're talking about.
Yeah, you bet.
Pornography is instantly available, and that's what all of us parents fear all the time.
And what we haven't yet talked about, but will, they do Snapchat each other pictures in various states of undress. I will say for Nicole on her behalf, she writes a little piece in the book about that she does not do that. Nicole is in the minority. Most teenagers I work with estimate that between 70 and 85% of their peer group regularly send pictures back and forth in some state of undress.
Let me just ask Nicole, does that sound right to you, what Wes just said, that the vast majority of young people are doing that these days?
Yeah, the desensitization is definitely happening. I experienced it myself. Growing up in a generation that always had like access to technology, I always had access to like porn websites if I wanted to, and I could see pictures of people who are naked all the time. So whenever I see someone who is naked on my Finsta feed, I am not that surprised. Even though we still have that guideline within the Finsta community that we will not share any of the contents that are on our feed without their permission.
And that's, don't these that's photographs very important. On Instagram, they don't last a long time. Don't they disappear at some point?
That's Snapchat.
This is a different deal.
Yeah, Finstagram will stay there as long as they want. But Nicole, I don't want to let go of something Nicole just said that's crucially, vitally important. So for parents, what we want the message for parents to hear is not panic.
There's some parents listening to this out there who are panicked right now.
Yeah. But our model is always pause, listen, understand, and be sex positive. And if you do not enter a dialogue with your kids about all these topics we're talking about, then they're just going to go do them without you being involved. So one of the things that she said that's very important, that's why the books are called Consent-Based Sex Education, is in the Finsta group she has, and in all the Finsta groups I know of that are the ones that do share nudes, to post something nude without the understanding of the group and the permission of the group is forbidden. It is within that ethos, bad manners. So this we see in Snapchat world, boys love to send pictures of their penis. They think that's super neat, like a peacock or something showing its feathers. And that's not actually considered good etiquette. So tell your kids not to do that.
But Nicole, we're sitting here talking about etiquette. It seems to me the risk someone might be taking by sending electronically a photo of themselves, either nude or mostly nude, that's still pretty risky, isn't it? I mean, you worry about your social media accounts being seen by employers someday. What about a photo of somebody undressed flashing around the internet?
It is pretty risky, but I think that's how much we need, that tells us how much we need sex education within family environments, because if your parents were sex positive and you were raised to value your body, then you will definitely know how to handle those situations when you're like wanting to send a nude picture to someone or post it on your Finsta Instagram.
And the motivation here, I still want to get back to the motivation for doing this. It sounds like for a lot of kids, it's to get positive feedback. Mm-hmm. Are there other motivations here? I mean, Wes sort of just talked about boys wanting to strut their stuff. I can get that. But why else?
Well, personally, I have not encountered any other situations where people had different intentions in their nude posts. But mm-hmm. most of the times it's for body positivity or self-love.
And I have...
Let me get our phone number out for parents out there who are concerned and want to call in and perhaps ask a few questions here about this big development in our culture. 816-235-2888 is the phone number. Again, 816-235-2888, or tweet us at KCUR up to date. Wes, I cut you off.
I absolutely have had other experiences of this. There are kids, both male and female, who use the distribution of their nudes as a sort of, popularity enhancer. In the book, I also did some interviews with kids who practice exchange of nudes, and they were unbelievably insightful about the dynamics surrounding this. And there are several very negative ones. One is if you exchange with a partner, which is very common, it's part of the dating practice at this point. If you exchange with a partner and the relationship goes south, which is 100% of the time in adolescence, then there can be situations of extortion where the person says, well, if you don't stay with me, I'm going to expose your nudes. I have an example where the ex new girlfriend of one of the partners threatens the old partner, if you don't stay away from him, I'm going to expose your nudes. So there's an example of a concerning dynamic with these kind of things that kids need to talk to kids about that. You need to say, be aware of how this can come back on you.
You know, we're really sitting here in this day and age. We've talked on this show, again, any number of times about cell phones and the unintended consequences of those phones and the uncertainty around what those phones are doing to our kids. Well, it strikes me that, well, the chickens have come home to roost here, that now we're sitting here talking about this topic.
Yes.
This is precisely one of those areas that we're having to navigate on the fly as our young people go out into the world and are partaking in this practice.
I could not have said that better myself. You
can use that in your book.
I will probably do that.
Believe me,
you're in there.
Yeah.
So we have talked for years and been very much ahead of the curve on this show about where this was headed. And I think what's changed for me that I'm less hysterical than I used to be about it is hearing how kids are talking about it, and it's reassuring that when they see an extortion plot against them, they adjust their behavior. Now, there are other people who, as I said, are using nudes as a ticket for popularity. There's always that girl, usually, who is highly desired, almost like a baseball card, that, you know, you want that baseball card.
Wow.
And that's the picture you want to get. Now, I think I'm not going to judge that person or the many of them for that decision, but I think parents better be in the conversation to be talking about what's happening in a dynamic where nudes become a method of building popularity.
Well, let's talk about the role of parents here in just a moment. Just to clear up a couple things here. Okay. Daniel from Kansas City, Missouri has written to ask, aren't kids, Nicole, concerned about hackers, much like what happened to Ashley Madison's website a few years ago?
So there probably isn't a way to prevent hackers from our Finsta accounts.
There's no way to prevent it, you're saying?
Well, yeah, as much as you can't prevent your own main account hacking. So the best way is to just keep it secure as possible and only let the people that you trust follow your Finstas.
And I would point out, it's an interesting comparison. I would have pointed out Jennifer Lawrence as the person who had the mega hack of her iCloud. She absolutely did nothing wrong. She didn't send those pictures to anyone.
Right.
She's written and spoken articulately about this as a form of sex offense. I think follow that conversation with Jennifer Lawrence. I think she's had some good things to say about it. The Ashley Madison thing is a little bit different because, first of all, that was a fake system. There weren't even real people on there. All the women on Ashley Madison, all the straight women were robots. That was completely a scam.
Mm-hmm.
So when people got caught, they were being caught cheating on their partner with a robot. In this case, kids, honestly, I don't want to overstate this, but I have had 100 conversations with kids about this. And the attitude, if your nudes get out, is, that's kind of immature that he shared my picture with somebody. What a man boy. That's the attitude. It isn't like my life is over.
It's not like my life is over.
It used to be. It's not anymore.
816-235-2888. We're talking with Dr. Wes Crenshaw and Nicole Ahn today about sort of the use of social media to spread provocative pictures of young people and what that means for them, what it means for our culture. 816-235-2888 is the number. Dave from Independence, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. What I'd like to know is now, where's the boundary between nudity and pornography? If you're doing nudes on the cell phone, where's the boundary?
Yep, good question. So,
Nicole, where is the boundary? Is there a boundary?
I would define it as what it was intended for.
Right.
A nude picture can be meant for like workout progresses or how your body's changing or how much you appreciate your body. And if it was taken to do that kind of jobs for yourself, then I don't think it should be defined as a pornography.
But if we've come this far, isn't just the logical next step for couples who are newly dating to begin showing pictures of themselves engaging in goodness knows what?
Happens a lot.
It happens a lot. We've already crossed.
I can go on a lot of stories. I was telling Nicole one today about horrified her at breakfast. Dave's point is well taken, and so is Nicole's. The intent of the picture when you hit snap it may be different than what it becomes used for. At one point 5 years ago, and I'm sure the number is higher now, a third of all child pornography defined as persons under the age of consent in nude photos. A third of it was made the way we are talking about today. And I make that point in the book. I compare this sort of body positive thing with this other dark web version. So, you know, a young person may be very pleased with their picture. It may be very healthy and fit and non-sexually provocative. And someone who's into the child pornography is going to think that was a score if it ever gets to them. So, yes, this is a concern.
So I guess the big question then as we begin to move towards the end of the segment is what on earth are parents to do about this? How should they be responding, Wes?
Well, like I said earlier, panic is the last thing you should do. We have some really good interviews in the book where parents panicked or tried to cut off the service or monitor the child's moment to moment, and that tripled the child's interest in getting it done. And there's some pretty disturbing stuff in the second book, things that make me blanch about kids who were in non-dialogical relationships with parents who just went off rogue and became involved in a lot of online things. And these are not kids from, you know, Chicago. These are kids from our land. So parents must understand the material, understand the discussions we're having today, and understand the current real dynamic, and then be engaged in a discussion with your kids consistently.
Nicole, as you talk to kids for the book about this, what did you come across in terms of kids saying they've had positive experiences with their parents about how to navigate this new set of rocks on the beach here? What came through in those interviews?
Many of my friends told me that externalizing their struggles or like their thoughts on an account or a picture that they post has helped them conceptualize their ideas and actually talk about it with their parents and get help through that. And instead of like just sitting around on your desk and thinking about your problems, like externalizing it and writing it down and posting a picture about it will actually help them think more about it and come to a discussion about their parents.
Do many of your friends, do they have good relationships with their parents? Can they have dialogue about these issues, or do you find that most kids simply don't?
Well, I have friends who have kind of difficult relationships with their parents, yet ever since they started to post things on their Instagram and be socially active and be active about their emotions, they've definitely got some help from their parents and started to talk more to authorities about it.
And I have illustrations of all possibilities. I have the ones where the parent bucks and the child goes rogue. I have one where the child has a Finsta and the parent is aware of that and converses with her about the wisdom of that and how to proceed, and that goes much better. So it's all over the range, and the dialogue is clearly what's valuable.
the consent-based sex education book that you're talking about, it's not out yet, but parents can still engage and kids
yes.
can still engage. Just quickly, how, Wes?
Book one is in book form. Book two is about to go out. That's the one that contains all this material. And we are actively working with focus groups and parents. Church of the Resurrection is helping us with that. If people want to get involved in an early read, I'll get them a free copy in exchange for them giving us their thoughts and reviews and panic or whatever they want to feed back to us.
That's Dr. Wes Crenshaw, Lawrence psychologist. This morning he was joined by Nicole Ahn, a co-author of Wes's latest books. Thank you both for an enlightening conversation and maybe for scaring the heck out of a lot of parents out there. But
we come in peace.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you both.
Thanks,
Steve.
Okay, tomorrow on the show we'll find out what should be on your summer reading list. Our book critics give us their current favorites in fiction and nonfiction, and we'll hear about classics they think you should revisit. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.